First, we take a look at some of the week's top stories in national politics. Confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh are in their second day. Arizona's governor announced a replacement for the late Senator John McCain. And President Trump is again criticizing Attorney General Jeff Sessions for Justice Department prosecutions of Republicans, but he hasn't moved to fire him. We want to hear what you think about the tension between President Trump and Attorney General Sessions at 800-642-1234. Do you think the president will fire Attorney General Sessions or should fire him? Do you think Sessions would or should resign? Are you concerned about the president's criticism of the Justice Department, especially amidst the Mueller investigation? If you're a supporter of President Trump, how do you feel about the job Attorney General Sessions is doing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter for The Guardian. Sabrina, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the confirmation hearings at the U.S. Senate. Democratic senators sought to delay the beginning of the hearings because of records. There were some protesters disrupting the opening remarks. Today, it's the question and answer time. What have been some of the hot issues so far today?
Well, Brett Kavanaugh has been questioned on issues ranging from abortion to gun control and, of course, presidential powers, which is much more relevant given the backdrop of a special counsel investigation. He's also been asked questions about environmental policy and some of the Obama-era regulations that have been overturned by the Trump administration. So it's been very wide-ranging. The tone has been more congenial today after yesterday's attempts to delay the hearing by Democrats. But much like Neil Gorsuch, the president's previous nominee to the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh hasn't offered a great deal of information in terms of what his actual legal views are on some of these big ticket issues, most importantly, abortion.
Let's key in first on that executive power issue. Kavanaugh was asked about the president's power to pardon himself and to ignore a subpoena. Here's a listen to a question from Senator Dianne Feinstein.
You can't give me an answer on whether a president has to respond to a subpoena from a court of law?
My understanding is that you're asking me to give my view on a potential hypothetical, and that's something that each of the eight justices currently sitting on the Supreme Court, when they're sitting in my seat, declined to decide potential hypothetical cases.
And this is something we see pretty often in these confirmation hearings. Senator wants to know how they view a certain issue. A nominee says hypothetical, can't talk about that, right?
Yes, a lot of his responses have been couched in the fact that these are hypotheticals. And the challenge, I think, for Kavanaugh is that when it comes to questions around executive powers, it's not really a hypothetical. If you look at the ways in which the president has sought to undermine Robert Mueller's investigation and very real questions as to whether the president might try to pardon himself or some of his associates who have been indicted, as well as what would happen if the president was delivered a subpoena. Would he have to comply? I think that Kavanaugh certainly did not want to touch some of these very controversial subjects. It's not going to do a lot, of course, to pacify concerns among Democrats, but I think that he also knows that Republicans can confirm him with a simple majority, and I don't think that Republicans are ultimately going to hinge their support for Kavanaugh on what he says about the powers of the presidency.
Another issue that you mentioned, it came up today in their questioning, abortion rights in Roe versus Wade. Here's what Kavanaugh had to say when asked about his view on that.
It is an important precedent of the Supreme Court. By it, I mean Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Been reaffirmed many times. Casey is precedent on precedent, which itself is an important factor to remember. And I understand the significance of the issue, the jurisprudential issue, and I understand the significance as best I can. I always try, and I do here, of the real world effects of that decision, as I try to do of all the decisions of my court and of the Supreme Court.
Is that enough to allay concerns of maybe Republicans like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, who are maybe worried about the future of Roe versus Wade?
Well, I think that what both Senators Murkowski and Collins, who have who have openly suggested that they would not support a nominee who is hostile to Roe v. Wade have said is that in their meetings with Kavanaugh, he assured them that the matter was settled law. Now, in his responses today, he also spoke a great deal about the precedent of Roe v. Wade and the significance of it, I think trying to signal that he wouldn't necessarily overturn the case if it came back before the Supreme Court, but at the same time, he didn't necessarily rule that out either. And I think the challenge when a lot of these nominees talk about precedent is that the Supreme Court in this last term alone overturned decades worth of precedent. Neil Gorsuch, for example, had said during his confirmation process that he wrote an entire book on precedent, but then he ruled in favor of overturning overturning Janus. That was a decision that dealt with public sector unions, and it was a 41-year precedent that the Supreme Court overturned. So I don't think that when Kavanaugh talks about precedent that the skeptics are necessarily buying into the fact that Roe v. Wade is not very much under threat. The only decision we have that we can go by is his dissent in a D.C. Circuit Court ruling that allowed an undocumented teen to seek an abortion while in federal custody. And he was certainly very much vocal in his opposition to that. I think he knows that he doesn't want to say anything too controversial because that, of course, is something that ultimately could very much upend his confirmation process. I think abortion is very much at center stage. But again, I think he was very careful not to really signal one way or the other how he would rule if the Supreme Court did ultimately have to revisit that decision.
Given that unless something kind of weird happens, he's probably going to be confirmed. Is this still an opportunity for both parties to send messages about their party's stance on issues and maybe their potential presidential candidates in the future?
Yes, I think that you certainly saw out the gate Senators Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. This was yesterday. Two of the potential contenders on the Democratic side want to make very clear that they were objecting to the process by which the Kavanaugh nomination, the consideration of his nomination has transpired. I think that certainly on issues such as reproductive rights, on environment, on the powers of the presidency, these are very much at the core of what progressive voters are concerned about as they head to the polls in the November midterm election. So Democrats also see this as an opportunity to shore up support within the base. I think one of the challenges for Democrats, and this is going to factor into both midterms and in the next presidential election, is that they have not been able to convince their supporters to be as focused on the judiciary, on the Supreme Court, as Republicans have. Conservatives have been very successful in really making this one of the priorities for the Republican base. And so you now are starting to see Democrats take from that same playbook, and it certainly helps that some of those on the committee also might have aspirations for higher office. So this is an opportunity for them to also take a very public stand.
Sabrina Siddiqui is with us from The Guardian for a look at some of the top stories in national news. Want to move on from those confirmations now. There's more criticism from President Trump directed at his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Here's the president's tweet, quoting, "Two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Two easy wins, now in doubt because there's not enough time." Can you give us some background, Sabrina, what he's talking about there?
Well, the president is referring to the indictments of Chris Collins and Duncan Hunter, both Republican members of the House. Chris Collins representing New York and Duncan Hunter, California, respectively. Collins was indicted on charges of insider trading and Hunter on charges of misusing campaign funds. There are many ways in which this tweet was misleading. Certainly, these are not Obama-era investigations. In fact, both of these investigations, they really began toward the end of the Obama administration, and much of the investigative work has transpired in the first year and a half of the Trump administration. It's also, of course, very peculiar for the president to suggest that Jeff Sessions, who was one of the most conservative members of Congress, is somehow running a Justice Department that's hostile to Republicans. The Justice Department is largely run by Republican appointees. And, of course, when it comes to the midterms, the fact these are not necessarily going to now be two easy wins for Democrats. These are still Republican-leaning districts. They may be competitive now that the two lawmakers, incumbents, have been indicted, but I think that the president really is using this less as an opportunity to really talk about the substance of these indictments and more as an opportunity to continue and attack Jeff Sessions and frame the Justice Department as somehow biased or tainted in its reputation.
We're talking to Sabrina Siddiqui, political reporter at The Guardian, about this week's news in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234 about the ongoing friction between President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Do you think President Trump should fire Jeff Sessions? Do you think he will? Does this worry you, or do you think it's a good idea? How do you think things are going to play out? If you're a supporter of the president, do you think Sessions needs to go? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We continue our conversation with Sabrina Siddiqui of The Guardian, looking at this week's top stories in national politics, staying with the Jeff Sessions and President Trump story. Sabrina, some people have read that tweet as saying the president is explicitly directing the Justice Department to use political considerations in its prosecutions. And some people saying that could actually be used by the Mueller probe to prove corrupt intent in their investigations.
Yes, and I think that ultimately what has been very striking about the president and the way that he's talked about the investigation and the Justice Department is, and I mentioned this before the break, that the overarching tactic is to try and discredit the work of the special counsel, to try and suggest that there's some sort of widespread conspiracy against the president at the Justice Department and the FBI. But what that does is it overlooks the fact that Jeff Sessions, Rod Rosenstein, Christopher Wray, Robert Mueller himself, these are all longtime Republicans. And most of these people, with the exception, of course, of with the exception of the special counsel, have been appointed by the president. But ultimately what this is an effort by the president to continue and litigate this investigation in the court of public opinion, especially as his legal team remains deadlocked in whether or not to cooperate with Mueller and his probe.
Let's go to our callers now. Jim is with us in Suamico. Jim, hi.
Good afternoon.
What do you think?
Well, my comment is that the president likes people around him who do what he says, and we have an office that, to which Jeff Sessions was appointed, which is not one that placates the president, but serves the rule of law. Whether or not I voted for Donald Trump or I support Jeff Sessions, the president is trying to do harm to the rule of law by willy-nilly placing in a position someone who will be his personal protector.
Jim, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Rob in Winona, Minnesota. Rob, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think, Rob?
Well, in a manner of speaking, weirdly, I hope that Trump acts as Sessions because it might finally reveal Trump to be who he actually is.
Rob, thanks for the call. And Sabrina, Republicans in the Senate have talked about the idea of Trump firing Sessions. There have been different messages. What kind of things have we heard?
Well, I think that the most notable development is that Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Lindsey Graham, who would be poised to take over that chairmanship if Grassley were to choose to take on another committee chairmanship when the new Congress kicks in, they've signaled openness to the president firing Jeff Sessions, although they've said that it wouldn't be possible before the midterms. I think Republican leaders have been a lot more resistant, having said that, to the idea. Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn, the top two Republicans in the Senate, they've both certainly batted down the notion that the president should remove Sessions from his job. I think that there's certainly a case to be made that it would be difficult for a replacement to get the votes, even if it was a Republican-controlled Senate. I think there would be a great deal of opposition when it comes to the confirmation process. certainly would invite charges of obstruction of justice from Democrats in terms of the president's motivations. So there's a very real question as to whether or not a replacement can be confirmed, but it's also worth noting that the president has really tested Republicans on Capitol Hill to see what he can get away with, and so far they've been very reluctant to really pick a fight with the president. So it is an open-ended question as to whether he will, after the midterms, fire Sessions and see if Republicans actually do defy that move, or if they ultimately are willing to go along with it.
Thanks for those calls. Sabrina Siddiqui is with us from The Guardian, looking at some top stories in national politics. Want to touch on a big story about a book that isn't even out yet. Bob Woodward, veteran journalist, has this book out on the inner workings of the Trump White House. We don't need to dig into everything that's come out from that so far, but what kind of reaction are you seeing? A lot of what appear to be insider stories painting a troubled picture inside the White House.
It's another striking portrait of chaos and dysfunction in the White House, and this, of course, is the second book this year to portray an administration in disarray, the first being Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury. The difference, of course, is that while some questioned Michael Wolff's methodology and reporting, Bob Woodward is a widely acclaimed journalist. And the president himself has in the past praised Woodward. So the White House is having difficulty distancing itself from some of these very remarkable anecdotes in the book about the president's own advisors thinking he's a threat to national security, about the president's aides talking about him like he's likening him his behavior to that of a child. All they've really been able to do is issue statements saying that the book is fiction, but Woodward has said that he spoke with more than a dozen current and former administration officials and that he has recordings. So I think they know that if they really take this to too public of a level, the White House, then Woodward ultimately does have the opportunity to put out transcripts of his conversations.
I want to move on to a couple issues you've been writing on, Sabrina. The late Senator John McCain, his replacement was appointed by Arizona's governor. It's former U.S. Senator John Kyle. Can you talk about that selection?
Well, John Kyle, of course, served in the Senate himself for three terms by McCain's side. And he rose in the ranks of leadership before he retired at the end of 2012. He was the second-ranking Republican in the Senate. What's been notable about his appointment is that he has been working as a so-called Sherpa for Brett Kavanaugh. In other words, he has been guiding Brett Kavanaugh through the confirmation process for the Supreme Court. And because Republicans have just a razor-thin majority in the Senate, they can only afford to lose one vote when it comes to the Kavanaugh nomination. So they know that now that they will have the support of John Kyle. So there's been some questions as to whether this is a political appointment, especially because John Kyle also has not committed to serving beyond the end of this year, and which would then force Governor Ducey in Arizona to make another appointment in January to serve out the remainder of Senator McCain's term before a special election, which is anticipated in 2020.
And then in midterm election news, you wrote about, once again, there are questions about Nancy Pelosi and her leadership of Democrats in the House, a minority leader now, possibly a speaker if the Democrats were able to regain their majority. You start off describing a scene that could have been yesterday, but it was actually 2012, I think.
Well, yes, because this conversation comes up every 2 years or so. Is this the moment where Nancy Pelosi will be forced to step aside? Is her leadership position in danger? And that's not to say that the question has not been lingering and perhaps more potent this year. But so far, one of the challenges for those Democrats who do believe she should be replaced has been finding someone who would actually be a suitable replacement. She's a very prolific fundraiser. There's probably no one else who could bring in more than $100 million in one election cycle alone. And there's also the very real question as to whether anyone else would have the votes. After the 2016 election, she was challenged by Tim Ryan, a congressman from Ohio, and ultimately she still was able to secure a two-thirds majority. Now, if Democrats retake the House and we're talking about the speakership, then we'll have to wait and see if there's anyone who is going to make a credible run against Pelosi. But right now, she still appears to have the support of the Democratic caucus on Capitol Hill. And even some of these candidates who have not committed to supporting her as speaker or as leader, those Democrats are on the ballot. Oftentimes they say that when they're competing in some of these races, and then they strike a very different tone when they actually arrive on Capitol Hill.
So what does it say that there's a lot of attention to potentially replacing Nancy Pelosi? On the Republican side of things, they know they're going to have to replace Paul Ryan after this round of elections because he's not coming back.
Well, that's why it's somewhat striking that the conversation is so fixated on Nancy Pelosi. And part of that speaks to the ways in which Republicans have been successful at making her the sort of villain in the midterm elections and trying to make this election a referendum on Pelosi and the Democratic establishment, when obviously the election is more likely to be a referendum on President Trump. As you note, there is going to be an open race for speaker or for leader on the Republican side, and there's very little attention being given to who the candidates are. But in some ways, I think what Republicans are doing is they're operating off the same playbook they used against Hillary Clinton, where they have someone in Nancy Pelosi who is a very polarizing figure. She also happens to be a prominent woman in power, and they have seen a way to use her in their attack ads and to try and tie Democrats to her as if she is toxic in some way. Now, the problem is that polling has shown that the attacks are not actually all that effective for Republicans, that Nancy Pelosi is not a priority for voters when they head to the polls. But I think ultimately Republicans don't want to talk about the president. And so this is what they've actually tried to hinge a lot of their attack lines on.
We'll leave it there for now. Sabrina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter at The Guardian. She was with us for a weekly roundup of national news.